This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 11th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is Data of Comparable Magnitude, Part 2. This lecture is 58 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
All right, now, on this October the 11th, 1955. I want to tell you more about data of comparable magnitude. I've given you the theoretical background roughly as follows, that data can be compared to data of similar scope and importance, similar subject, similar intention. But when data are of dissimilar subject, intention, scope, magnitude, they cannot be compared. When any datum stands as an only datum, it then has a tendency to persist, and the persistence of a datum depends upon the ununderstandability of the datum. When we do not understand the datum, it tends to persist. We keep it around, looking at it, saying, "What is this thing?" And if it's only one thing, then we don't know what it is. Follow me? Now, the only mechanical difficulty with this datum is that it is only one thing. If there were two data, or better still, eight or nine data similar to this, we could then understand these data since we would have data of comparable magnitude. Now, the entire subject back of matched terminaling, to go way back on the track in Scientology, depends upon just this fact, data of comparable magnitude. When we have data of comparable magnitude, they discharge or cease to persist. And this, when it gets into solid energy, is represented by the fact that there is an erasure of the two data, which are set side by side. They mechanically discharge one against the other, and so change and disappear. Follow me now? If we put four data there, two pairs of matched terminals, which is known as double terminaling, we get a more rapid discharge. You follow me? An individual then does not have time when he has a datum of comparable magnitude and has no time for it, since it does not then move or stand in relationship to another datum. Time depends on two or more particles. Two or more particles. One particle doesn't make time, so we get a timeless datum and thus get things floating on the time track and drifting into present time and out of it at will, looking for a comparable datum. If you could figure every one of the engrams you get in restimulation as a poor pathetic thing that was taking a cruise all around the universe to try to discover another datum, you would have a very good understanding of what restimulation is. There aren't two data there, so the thing never discharges. Now, an individual stands and looks at a present time problem. The present time problem is in present time, but the present time problem calls up data of comparable magnitude out of the n-gram bank so that one can understand the singularity of the present time problem. And we get the mechanisms of restimulation. Why things go into action and restimulation. One sees a present time problem concerned with disease and gets disease into restimulation in his n-gram bank. Thus, the item in the n-gram bank and the item existing in present time environment pretend to be data of comparable magnitude. If they were very close together, they would discharge one against the other. And there is no telling then how many successful n-grams or locks or energy masses you use all the time. See, there's no telling how many successful ones you use. They would come up into present time, and as is the present time problem, and as is themselves, and that would be that. Poof. You go down the street, and there's a scream of brakes, and
You have an engram, scream breaks, nothing happened there. Wham, wham, you don't feel particularly nervous about it. It instantly discharges and dismisses and doesn't hang up. But if one hangs up on an individual, it means that they were not of comparable magnitude, intention, or proportion, that something has gone wrong here, that the present time problem did not follow along the predicted curve of the engram bank. And something like this is liable to stay in restimulation. Fellow falls 3 stories and doesn't get hurt. This gives him an interesting computation on falling. Falling is fatal, the engram bank says. He falls and gets hurt. But he fell and didn't get hurt. He'll go on talking about this. He'll say, yap, endlessly, you know. And I can just see him now telling his great-grandchildren. Once upon a time, I was working at such and such a building, and I fell, and I didn't fell 3 stories, and I didn't get hurt. What's he telling them for? He has at once 2 things in action. One, he is trying to attract their interest, and 2, he's wishing somebody would come up and say, well, I did too. But when you come up and you say, well, I fell once 3 stories or 4 stories, and I didn't get hurt either, he becomes upset. Why did he come upset? Actually, his story is unmocking. There are people around who do nothing but this obsessively. They aren't trying to unmock you or anything. They just go into obsessive duplication with you. You say, I fell 3 stories and didn't get hurt. They say, I fell 3 stories and didn't get hurt. It isn't even true. They just say this. You see that? Well, this is the mechanism of restimulation. You can see it on every hand. It is also the mechanism of gaining interest. Now, if you can do the only thing that was ever done, you, of course, have something that's unmockable. You've got something, then you're stuck with it. After a while, you get tired of this darn thing, and you say, hey, hasn't anybody else ever won a foot race on ice in 0 weather at the North Pole? Please. For years, somebody has been entertaining the troops. People, parties, everywhere, see, with winning the foot race on ice. The dead of winter at the North Pole, very unusual. Raced it with 3 polar bears, he did. Quite a story. After a while, he gets tired of telling this story himself. It's still there. He gets bored with it. Other people have failed to laugh at it, failed to acknowledge it here and there, and although it still might be a successful story, he doesn't want to tell anymore. He's tired of having that particular story around. He thinks he might have a better story someplace or another. So he then starts looking pathetically for somebody who won a foot race on ice, at least. He will start reading books on the subject of foot races and about ice. He eventually, in another lifetime, becomes an expert on glaciers or something. You see? It's an only one incident. And although people will laugh at it because it's unusual, they aren't too happy about it either. An only one incident is sitting up there. But if you tell it to other people, they mock it up, and therefore you've kind of got 2 incidents. There are a lot of hopeful things to do about this only one condition, you see? A lot of hopeful things. But all of these things add up to one thing, which is comprehensible, because it talks about two-nesses. And this one thing is then very comprehensible. Data of comparable magnitude. The early logic in the list given in 1951. Now, let's add this up to tolerance for confusion. Can people tolerate confusion? There is a thing called threshold of confusion. Anyone could be said to have a threshold of confusion, possibly quite different than anyone else's. A Londoner has a certain threshold for confusion. A person in Edinburgh has a threshold for confusion. person living in the country would have a threshold for confusion, but it's not necessarily the environment in which they live, which is what has made psychology an unworkable subject. It's relatively unworkable for this reason, that it has a bug in its basic assumptions, and that bug is that man's well-being depends on his conforming to his environment. That is one of their sovereign assumptions. And they tell you this, they announce it early in their textbooks. Also, they say the spirit and anything connected with it, that's a matter for religion, and we have nothing whatsoever to do with it. And they have several other idiosyncrasies. In other words, you can't throw out a body of data if you're studying something. So you've got to study a body of data, and you've got to study what really relates to that data. You can't go discarding things in all directions and saying, well, we'll just discard that because it seems the thing to do at the moment. We'll just discard all that, and therefore so and so. Actually, man's success depends upon him making his environment conform to him. And if man did not make the environment conform to man, he would not now be alive and be man. And when you're striking at the very heart of man's success on earth, you want to be wary. Sooner or later, man is going to find out what you're doing eat you up. And just why this unpopular, dull subject, which says, amongst other things, that you cannot change your IQ. It's the science of status quo, not the science of the mind. If you were in psychology and you went on throwing out any data that didn't fit with your data, and you went on telling man that he had to conform to the environment, and you went on telling men these other things, one way or the other, sooner or later man had realized that you were working an operation on him, that you weren't doing a science at all. See? Do you know that many things can be pitched as a science, which are really just an operation? You know, just hocus pocus, and somebody hangs this word on it. Actually, psychology doesn't even fulfill the definitions of science. It was something that was born out of physiology in 1879 in Leipzig, Germany, under the hands of a professor by the name of Wundt. And it's not a study of the mind, it is a study of behavior as mirrored or seen in physiology. And it is a physiological study, and it is not a study of the mind, and has eventually gotten honest enough to admit this. But you see, as long as the thing sat there, everybody said, look, something is sitting on the subject of the mind, and we have a phenomenon that we talked about it yesterday. It's a camouflaged hole. We have a camouflaged hole. We don't observe that there is a hole in the structure of man's sciences there because there's apparently something sitting on top of it. It's a camouflaged hole. There's apparently something there, therefore the position is occupied and taken care of. See? So nobody then does anything about that or takes care of that communication line at all or thinks there's anything to be done in that communication sector. And one day somebody stumbles across this thing and finds out that there's no terminal there. It's a hole. And it isn't passing the communication lines, and nothing that is sent to it really gets returned properly or anything of the sort, and that it's causing a considerable randomity in man's society. We have realized that to a marked degree, and that is why we have studied Dianetics and Scientology, and why these researches were originally embarked upon. Because there was a camouflaged hole there, not a science. Now, if you were to look over an office, give you an example, you would see people sitting at a lot of desks. You know, there are a lot of desks in this office, and there are people sitting at every one of them, and every desk is a different department, let us say. Obviously, then, every department in that office is manned. And then let's say that things in that office don't run right. One of those people is not a terminal. He's a camouflaged hole. Got it? But because you sit there and you realize that the function of this or that is being cared for, there's a person there, isn't there? There's a department name there, isn't there? And as long as that department name exists and that person exists, a tremendous amount of traffic is not being handled in that office, and sooner or later, boom! In that quarter, you will get a sudden explosion. Things will start to happen. Randomity will shoot all the way through the office. You see this? Therefore, it is a dangerous thing to have a camouflaged hole in an office or in a society. It's a potential piece of confusion. And in the society itself, we have these very often in a family. Nothing is running right in the family. See? And father talks about how hard he works. He comes home and he sinks down and says, oh, is he exhausted? And he works and he talks about it. And everybody has to wait on him because he works so hard. He brings in £2.10 every Saturday. Everybody says, this poor man. And one day, the younger son or the daughter happens to be down at the works. Poor father, why hasn't he ever been promoted up to a point where he'd be permitted to handle a shovel? Or he could get £5? It's because the jerk is sitting there. He's not paying attention to his business. He's a camouflaged hole in the office, and everybody down there knows it. So we don't pay him. The devil with him. The family is convinced it has a breadwinner. Doesn't have. Eventually the daughter or somebody gets darn tired of this and goes out and gets a job. Everybody says, he says, well, my own child turns against me, and so forth. Get what's happening? Here's a whole area of confusion. People aren't eating well, they aren't being clothed well, they aren't being housed well, and we all think, well, it's the economic system or the chancellor or the exchequer or the mandates of the king or something like that. It's none of these things. It's just because there's a camouflaged hole in the family, and the camouflaged hole simply is not operative. And it's occupying the position, but it's not doing the job. Now, actually, there's a method of detection which can be utilized by an office manager, which is quite interesting. All he has to do is find out whose work he is doing. And the moment he finds out he's doing somebody else's work in the office, he knows he has a camouflaged hole. It's about the neatest thing that you ever wanted to run into. So let's see, whose work? I've been awfully busy this last week, you say, you know. Gosh. Hammer and tongs day and night. Boy, have I been busy. I shouldn't be busy. But look at that basket. That's all my work. I haven't been doing my work. Whose work have I been doing? Well, let's see. I spent Tuesday night addressing envelopes. Wednesday night I spent in conference with a bunch of people that hadn't gotten any mail. Thursday night I spent straightening out some files. Wait a minute. What the devil is wrong with the filing and addressing department? It was a girl, and she comes to work every morning, and she's working, and she works awful hard. She sits all day long shuffling pieces of paper, and she types things out, and she addresses envelopes for a minute. There she sits. She's doing this when she's being watched, and the rest of the time she's going this way. It's a camouflaged hole in the office. It is in the good interests of management to detect these things before they produce an explosive confusion. You know what could happen in the vicinity of one of these camouflaged holes? Gee whiz, you're liable to get all sorts of complaints coming in. The complaints come in to the camouflaged hole. Gets orders to do something and answer a bunch of people who are upset. They say, oh, yes, yes, get busy on it right away. And all of a sudden, 3/4 of the customers of the office are upset with the company, and its income starts off. Somewhere around here, somebody isn't in communication with something. And all a manager has to ask himself is, whose work am I doing? Got it? And there's the answer. Quite interesting, because these things exist all too frequently in a group. Now, psychology has existed that way, and it gives us a hard time, because people come around us and they say, well, this is all cared for. What are you people doing anything about the mind for? My psychology's known that for years. We are psychology. Psychiatry takes care of insanity. I think you people are crazy to be studying the mind. So we as a group have a couple of camouflaged holes, see? People get poured into these asylums on an assembly belt. You know, poured in. Must be something happening in there. More of them. They come out, get poured in, come out. 750,000 persons every 24 hours are admitted into institutions in the United States. That's what a camouflaged hole can do to a society. A psychiatrist must be a very, very good man, however, he studied 12 years to get there. Nobody says what, but he studied 12 years. And you couldn't possibly do anything for the insane because, look, you didn't study 12 years. You only studied 4 or 5, 10 times as much and more effectively. So the government's sitting down here saying, we've got these things all covered now. Why are these people so ambitious about the whole thing? It's nonsense. Must be a racket. Oh, what we like are nice, constant people, you know, people who know their business and have proper degrees from the proper places. Truth of the matter is if this is what it means to have a degree in these subjects, I'd rather go down here to Latrine and Hyde Park and get one issued me. It doesn't matter. Nobody ever cured a case with a degree. It just helps, like the Dickens, to be validated so that the public doesn't think it's being preyed upon, but that's about the only good that it's going to do. Did you ever set up a certificate and have it audit the pre-clear? Won't do it. Just sits there and says, nothing. All right, it's a camouflaged hole. Theoretically, somebody could have a certificate that did not denote any training or action or processing. See? And preclers would look at it and say, well, a man must be auditing me. Now, he's thrown into confusion about the whole subject just because of this one thing. You see how it could be? You could have a mock-up standing there in the society, which is a random area, but it is an apparent datum. Now, get that. Because I've just described completely from beginning to end aberration. And we call this thing the stable datum. Now, when we say stable datum, we're referring to Axiom 53. A stable datum is necessary for the alignment of data. In other words, we have to start with one datum before we get data of comparable magnitude. We say, in this confusion, there's a datum 4 feet tall, and everything else compares to this datum. Now, anywhere on this chain of gradients, from the Nat to the Empire State Building, you could select one datum if it were in that order and with that intention and did refer to that chain and say, that is the stable datum. And then everything compares to that this way and everything compares to that that way, and you've got order. But let's get somebody who takes a look at the chain of stable data from the Nat to the Empire State Building and says, the stable datum in this particular case is geometric forms. Because the Egyptians built pyramids. And therefore, we can understand completely that the Nat is the same as the Empire State Building because the Egyptians built pyramids. This just doesn't ring a bell. It's because pyramids don't belong anywhere on that chain of logic. Yet the individual's liable to get this. And what do you know, in that chain of 10,000 data, he's liable to find 50 or 60 which relate to pyramids. And so he moves over here into a little pile of data all by itself, and he says, that's the subject. And this is the subject that tells why gnats are the same size as the Empire State Building. But nowhere in the subject do you find any gnats or any Empire State Buildings. Get the idea? Well, that is the individuation of data. That's how individuation of data comes about. You make some kind of a boner, and you get an individuation of data. Now, that's all very well. But if you do this too often, you will have a confusion of data. Here you have an apparency of related data, which you say does the NAP to the Empire State Building stunt. And yet this little area of data does not do the NAP to the Empire State Building stunt. Got confusion. You've run into that with me occasionally. I've told you that such and such and so and so unmocks such and such and so and so. Well, it did in the experiments given. It performed that way in the experiments given. But there must have been some other data of one kind or another, which probably I was unaware of and you were unaware of, which did not then make our data or our auditing of comparable magnitude. There was something haywire here someplace. And most of our work in this time is simply aligning our stable data and aligning our auditing forms so we can produce the same stable result. Hence, we get these things about communication bridges and stopping a process before you start another process and starting a process and all of that. See, we get these various methodologies of like how you do it, the rudiments, and so forth. We agree upon these things more or less simply because they are closer to the subject which we are tackling, and that subject is the mind. And the mind is a gradient scale between complete sanity and complete insanity, isn't it? From the NAT to the Empire State Building. It's a gradient scale, and there is a gradient scale between complete sanity as an unimaginable height and complete insanity. There's a bridge between those two points. In other words, there's data of comparable magnitude all the way up the line, and the six levels of processing which we are studying right here are no more and no less than a gradient scale of comparable magnitude, so that your preclear isn't suddenly run on the comparable magnitude 4 feet up the line before you've started the line. Because he won't get it. He won't be able to bridge it because you haven't given data of comparable magnitude. Well, get that? All right. Therefore, aberration itself is the introduction of a datum which pretends to be a stable datum and which someone pretends everything can be aligned upon, but which doesn't align. And that is insanity. Insanity is the assumption of a stable datum on the consideration that everything aligns upon it, whereas nothing aligns upon it. That is insanity in terms of data. A man has a confusion. In order to unmock the confusion, he injects stable data into it. Having the stable data in it, he is astounded that the confusion does not as is or die down. He is upset because this doesn't happen, but nevertheless, he's stuck with it. And so we get these wild vagaries of consideration on certain subjects. Somebody has the stable datum to the place to put beds or in livery stables. He's therefore nuts. Everybody knows he's nuts. He won't even be employed by a livery stable. Or as a matter of fact, he once walked in and always expecting to find something in his wife's bed, found a horse in the bed. Explained it by saying horses sleep in beds. Horses don't ordinarily sleep in beds, but they did once. He says, now I understand horses, they sleep in beds. And he has a stable datum on which he's going to align the entire subject of horses, because maybe this was born home to him in an engram or a moment of great shock or upset. See? All right, we plant in somebody's head during aniten, poor level of understanding. You can only do this during poor levels of understanding for the good reason that an individual will, as is practically any data there is, with enough ARC. So he'd have to be pretty low ARC to have something thrust at him. He wouldn't be able to comprehend even the moment was there. Unconsciousness is a sequence of alert moments which are not as is. Is it absolutely make you shudder down to the rim of your being to recognize that a person who has been anesthetized is at any instant conscious of any operation or pain done on him. And is never once unconscious, even though he's lying there unmoving. It's every datum which comes in, one after the other, is known only for that instant and is not related to the data before or after it. He then doesn't clearly recall what has happened to him because none of this was recallable. His unconscious period is disassociated from the rest of his life, but is a consecutive series of this. If you care to feel pain at its exquisite topmost height, simply feel it during an anesthetic. Afterwards, you will agree with everybody that you didn't feel anything because you don't remember feeling anything. But the truth of the matter is during the period, you felt everything. This is very, very slippery, you see. We don't have related moments of pain. They don't even stay in relationship to each other. And therefore, we have areas of confusion which have pain, and we start to run them out as an engram. None of this associates with any of this, and he jumps all over the bank and so forth. We start through it the next time, and he starts to relate it one way or the other. We run through it again. He's remembering more and more of it. We run through it again. He's remembering more and more of it. And he runs through it again, and it starts to de-intensify. And we run it again, and he's remembered more or less all of it. And we run it again, and it's gone. But that's very interesting that it can be erased at all. If it were never recorded, how could it ever be erased? Well, it must be recorded in a moment of consciousness, not a moment of unconsciousness, and so it is. It's each instant of the operation or engram is a fully conscious instant, disrelated from every other instant in the engram. And at any point along the line of unconsciousness, the person was totally aware, but only of that moment. Anytime you want to feed somebody some anesthetic to help him out, all you're doing is relieving him of the past memories and the future expectancies of the period. That's about all you're relieving him of. You're not relieving him of the sensations of the things. Quite an interesting thing. This is a very, very deep subject which all of us have to some degree studied, and a lot of us to a tremendous extent. You get a fellow who hits his thumb with a hammer, and we say, "What happened? I didn't feel any pain. It's all numb, the whole thing is gone." And then we start running him through this incident, and all of a sudden there's more and more scenery suddenly comes out of it. There's more and more incident suddenly turns up here, as though we were opening an accordion or something. That's because we have taken any moment and disrelated it from the consecutive moments of time. And now, if he doesn't have a confusion of comparable magnitude someplace on the track to as is this other confusion, so they'll discharge against each other, you've got an engram which is floating in present time, and he has a continuously sore thumb, and that is a chronic somatic illness. This is very simple rationale, if you look it over. See? Each instant of the engram is itself a datum without comparable magnitude. It is so intense, he is so concentrated, that each incident is dissimilar from every other incident. Therefore, no incident in the engram as is, and the engram as a whole, if there is no comparable incident coming up the track, no engram as a whole, then, as is, if there is not a confusion of comparable magnitude in its vicinity. So not only do we have datum to datum in the engram needing to be of comparable magnitude in order to as is, but we also need an engram of comparable magnitude to this engram to have it as is. And we could do these things. Life's wonderful. If we can't do these things, we've got a bunch of stuff stuck in present time, and we've got a confusion. So we are not only studying confusion in the stable datum. Anything can be a stable datum. You know, anything can be a stable datum. It's just that the people who are crazy have stable data that don't align with anything. And so we say they're insane. You follow me? That's insanity. Stable data, all unaligned, would be insanity. Stable data, aligned, would be sanity in the field of logic. See this? We are studying also then this other thing, which is data of comparable magnitude, which gives us logic and gives us the relationship of the stable datum to other data. And we are studying another thing that is very useful and important to you, very important to you. The only way you get rid of the confusion is by confusions of comparable magnitude. So we can handle the confusion now without having to handle the stable data. Let that sink in for a moment. Instead of addressing the subject of logic as logic, address the subject of confusion as confusion. And you will find out this interesting thing, that you can shoot out of a bank all of the stable data that you can put your hands on and have left a preclear who is very confused. It's very important. You can shoot out of a bank, erase and knock out by various mechanisms the stable data, leaving a confusion. Let's say we have a big possible confusion up here, but somebody has said, that is a nice big confusion. See? There's that confusion. We said it's a confusion. We've named it, see? And we've said, it's a confusion because so-and-so, so-and-so. All horses sleep in beds. But it's a confusion because of this. But we've explained it. Now let us say, let's shoot out of this fact that that thing up here is a confusion, that horses sleep in beds, and any other relationship we can find in it, what do we have left? We will have an unmoored confusion. We've now got a confusion. And a thetan not being able to duplicate this confusion and not able to get any logic into it has just cut it adrift. So if you shoot the stable data out of a bank, you cut an enormous amount of confusion adrift in the bank and leave on your hands a confused preclear. Get this. Evaluation is wrong simply because it upsets the stable data of the preclear. And the stable data is, to mix metaphors a little bit, the dam which is holding back the confusion. And now the fellow comes in to us and he says to us, I don't know what life's all about. I just know one thing. Horses always sleep in beds. It's trouble with this man. Stable data, the fellow's aberrant. He thinks horses sleep in beds. Listen, horses don't sleep in beds. And I can prove to you conclusively and completely that horses don't sleep in beds. And you do? And he sits right in front of you and spins. What's he do? He must be using this stable datum to hold down an awful lot of confusion until he can do something else about it. But he's holding down all this confusion. Horses sleep in beds explained to him the fact that his wife was faithful. But everything else is in doubt. But he did find a horse, not a man, in the bed. You shoot that out by invalidation. You say that isn't so. That's not a stable datum you're saying to him. Or really, that's a kind of stable datum which is very upsetting to people anyhow. Why do you hang on to this? You know, you give him opinions and advice. And you're astounded a moment later. Something entirely disrelated seems to be obsessing the man. He has changed his case right in front of our eyes. He said, well, woman... I don't know about women. And you say, well, look at this guy, really is crazy. He went from horses over to women. See, and now he doesn't even know anything about women.
He said he could kill women, only they won't let me do it.
Maybe he goes out and strangles the nurse. Get the idea? Now, this is logical to us because we understand its mechanism. We have achieved, then, a logic about logic, which is senior to the stable datum and the confusion. And that's quite a trick. And therefore, you should be able to handle both of them with the greatest of ease. Now, what's to do with this fellow? He comes in and he says, all horses sleep in beds.
For God's sakes, leave it alone. Walk on tiptoe all around where they live.
Leave it alone. Don't address it. That's very interesting. Never thought about that before. What do you know? But don't say that too much, because it'll as is. Well, I'll tell you what you could safely address. This merely tells you there must be a tremendous confusion there. We just start talking about confusion to this guy any way we want to. We can talk about I don't know. Confusions are composed of a bunch of I don't knows. We just start talking to him about I don't knows and confusions and so forth. We could. Of course, we are apparently validating the subject, but we've got to as is some confusion before he'll pick up or change any stable data. So pre-clears do not change as long as there's a tremendous amount of confusion on their cases. It isn't the unconsciousness in the bank, it's the confusion in the bank. The unconsciousness is the confusion. The anatomy of unconsciousness is confusion. So therefore, if you start shooting confusion off of the bank, you will shoot the unconsciousness off of the bank, just as easy as that. New way of tackling Dianetics, Modern Science, Mental Health. Brand new way of tackling it. So we can start shooting the confusion out by saying, "Have you ever felt confused?"
"Are you kidding?"
"Well, now, have you ever felt really confused?" "Oh, yeah, confusion.
It's pretty horrible in life. You go out in the street and there are people walking, and they walk in all directions. Oh, yeah, life's confusing."
Talk about it. You'll start as-ising the confusion itself. Don't go in for any heavy processing. But the next question you would ask him, after he had established that certain things were confusion, you had asked him about those one things, didn't you? See, people walking in all directions. Now, what do you know? What do you really know about this? People walking in all directions are very confusing. Now, we know something there. We know that it hasn't as is. It will if we discuss it, won't it? Huh? If we discuss it, to some degree, it'll as is by two-way communication. But that's because you have two data of comparable magnitude, you and the preclear. You're both people. That's as close as we need.
"Unless you have tremendous altitude. At this moment, you will simply say, 'You are no longer insane. You are no longer insane at all. You will walk forth from here completely well. Go, my son, and spin no more.'"
And he will, except there's always a glazed look in his eyes. And you've got a nice slave. Anybody who wants slaves can sure have them. They really produce randomity. Anyhow, our problem, however, has another anatomy, completely in addition to this. Look, it's a single datum. People walking this way are so confusing. Why is it a single datum? It's a single datum disrelated because he said it. So it must be floating in present time if this man is under duress and worried about his condition. That's the first thing we know about it. See, he says, "People walking." We say, that's the only datum he has on the subject. Now, one of the ways of doing it would be to discover by straight wire, improper, today, but discover by straight wire where this thing occurred, and as is it on a more or less perfect duplicate basis, you see. Get its proper ownership by straight wire in some way or another, you see. And as is the actual basic confusion. Well, this is reliable except for this thing. 95% of the pre-clears you wanted have 8,000 single incidents that should be related but aren't. And you find yourself in the endless concatenation of as-ising these things. That is the wrong direction. The right direction is increase the preclear's ability at all times on any subject, even if it's picking his nose. You want to get rid of the habit of picking noses, preclear? Nasty habit? Just make him more able on the subject and you'll get rid of it. It stays as a single datum because it doesn't have comparable data. Must be a single datum because it's floating in present time. This guy knows it's a bad habit. He knows it's a bad habit. He'd get rid of it if he could, but it has no data of comparable magnitude. One day he's reading in a book and said the only thing that the generals really found wrong with Washington was that he picked his nose. The fellow stops picking his nose. He's always considered himself sort of like George Washington. And he found out that this really was the case with George Washington. And of course, he now has a new choice. He could say, I'll be much more like George Washington now, and I'll really do it. Right? Usual thing is, though, he's found a datum comparable magnitude to himself. And he's decided then that he couldn't be such a bad guy. Follow me? Well,
you increase anyone's ability on a nasty subject or a very pleasant one, and you return his choice on it. Therefore, the increase of ability is the return of choice. Now, we take our PC, and instead of getting rid of one specific confusion that's bothering him, we raise his tolerance for confusion, and we win. We get him so calm about the subject of confusion that he could look at a dozen whirling dervish throwing knives at him and say, "Oh, really?"
So, very well. What's the auditing command that would produce results? He says, "People go in this way and that way, and it's horrible." You say, "Well, now, very well. Can you think of anything that's just as confusing?" My mother rushing around the house. And if you were going by old Dianetics, you'd say, "Ah, now we'll just dive for mother going around the house, eh?" And we'll shoot out that stable there. He might have just dreamed this up out of whole cloth. His mother might have been dead before he was conceived. Modern science being what it's bragged to be. It's a good thing modern science isn't as good as it says it is, because this would be pretty bad. Anyway, we'd then discuss this thing of mother flying around the house, and we'd merely talk about the thing. Well, can you think anything else just as confusing? Of course, the real auditing question is, give me a confusion of comparable magnitude. But you try this on some chap driving a lorry, and he's not liable to comprehend at once what you're talking about. But we have to know what we are really saying. That is the meaning behind this thing, and we deliver it any way we can. We say, "Well, is there anything that seems just as confusing to you?" And boy, how he will draw some of these things is a wonderful thing to behold. You couldn't possibly conceive. He'll say, "Yes, yes, I've got one now. Yeah, well, there's something that's pretty confusing, drinking soda water." "Well, now, is that just as confusing as your mother rushing around the house?" "Yes, sir, that's just the same thing." Don't jump him. That's the way his logic is fitting together. Or not fitting together. So we say to him, "Oh, that's good, that's good. What about soda water? You ever drink it very much and so forth? Is there any place around here where there is soda water? You ever remember soda water and so forth?" And he says, "Oh, boy," he says, "soda water is pretty bad. I spilled some in my lap once, yeah. And boy, my mother really got mad at me. We were out on a party and there were a lot of people present." See? We say, "Ah," the old Dianeticist would say, "Ah, boy, we got the incident." All we have to do is dive. No, sir, Scientologist, stay on that springboard. Don't dive. Just say, "Well, that's real interesting. That's very interesting. Now, that's fine. But right around here now, can you think of anything that's just as confusing?" And he says, "Yes, sir. The regularity with which that clock is ticking on your desk, that's pretty confusing." And you say, "This is random motion to this guy? I wonder why." Now, probably the best thing we ought to do is discover why he thinks the regular ticking of a clock is random motion. "Oh, no, you don't." "No, get back on that question." See, what are you doing? You're getting this guy, if you possibly can, to invent, if possible, a lot of data of comparable magnitude, and you're walking him out of the snake pit step by step. See? You're making him do this fantastic thing. You're making him add up a gradient scale, a concatenation of illogic. And when you get through, boy, will his tolerance for confusion be increased. That's all you're trying to improve, his consideration of confusion itself. Now, there are two ways to handle confusion. One is to take stable data
and add it up inside the confusion until the confusion itself is orderly. This is a very reliable method. This is what we are doing in Dianetics and Scientology. We're taking this terrific confusion called life, and we're looking for its basic stable data, and more we are aligning other data to its basic stable data. And the stable datum in this particular case was survive. We have even added to and gone a little bit below survive now. See? And we're getting better and better additive quality. So although it's moving in all directions, it is much less confused. Somebody reads Dianetics, Evolution of a Science, steps out of a hospital bed and goes his way, never has any processing afterwards. What has happened to this individual? He has simply read these things. He'd say, by golly, that is right. Now, we weren't evaluating for him at all. We were merely presenting him with a possibility of stable data. And then additive data to stable data, all of comparable magnitude, and it just purred off very nicely, and he says, that makes sense, that is the way I think of it, and it worked simply because his own bank is constructed that way, and he says, bang, that's the way it is. Now, at any time where we had a little divergence off of the concatenation of logic, we had an area of inturbulence, and processing was not very effective. See, we missed. There was a gap, or something was missing here or there, and therefore cases ran slower and all sorts of things. But we were as-ising a confusion called life. And today, as a group, we understand this pretty darn well. We talk to each other, and some guy says, meow, wow, 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 wow. We say, that's all related to his environment, my environment, this is related. And the guy can just go on blowing his stack. And we stand there and we say, I wonder what the devil he's mad about. Previously, he would have sent all his confusion in our way. And we would have said, and there just would have been more confusion sitting on the track. And that would have been the end of that. See? So there's one way to walk out of this. And that is via logic itself. Because it adds all these stable data to stable data, and you've got tracks and trails logic. You've got nicely mapped. So it isn't anywhere near as confusing because you can walk your way through it in various directions. Even if processing didn't work, we would have won to this degree. Processing does work. A good hard study of the axioms and so forth. They're a track of stable data, one way or the other. But if you were to study the axioms, which nobody possibly could do, to eradicate the axioms entirely from the bank without touching any confusions in the bank, man, that bank would really be spinning. But the funny part of it is the axioms also describe how confusions get there. In other words, if we simply deleted the axioms and did not use them to understand with, they would be worthless to us. Therefore, processing doesn't bring about an understanding on the part of the preclear. It would be worthless to the preclear. It increases his ARC. He adds up his life better. He understands better. He gets cognitions and so forth. So this is workable. Right? Well, now, we have this pattern, then. You understand nobody yet has erased the axioms. Even if you erase them by studying them, you would still have them by remembering them. Got it? And they would be better stable data than they were before because they're not unknown stable data. The axioms are unknown stable data, points of agreement along the lines of the track which have been used to resolve situations. And now, as long as they're hidden, they can produce randomity. Any hidden datum can produce a lot of randomity, believe me. All right, so there is that method. The other method would be to increase the preclear's tolerance of confusion and illogic itself. Increase his tolerance of it. So what you don't know about that person, you're not trying to erase anything. All you're trying to do is get him postulating along the line and say, you know, it doesn't matter that all these guys are walking mysteries. Doesn't matter. You're not looking for data. All you're trying to do is to get him to live happily without knowing everything there is to be known so that then he can change his consideration. He's liable to be on an obsessive knowingness. He sees somebody wearing a green hat, and he says to himself, I wonder why they're wearing a green hat. He says this act is practically below the level of consciousness. I wonder why she's wearing a green hat. What is the significance of her wearing a green hat? See? Figure. In other words, he can't tolerate a don't know. And if you can't tolerate a don't know, you can't tolerate a confusion.
Because the basis of a confusion is don't know. Just spread a lot of don't knows out, and you'll have a confusion. It's as easy as that. Now, if you say, I hate don't know and I hate confusion, oh, man, you become obsessively orderly. All that is wrong with a body cell is that it has detested disorder of any kind. And so it just work. Specialist. A specialist is one who cannot tolerate any kind of confusion. Be wary of him. He's nuts. All right, let's look this over and find out there are two routes to go at this. One is simply to understand the data in the confusion itself and how that lines up and becomes additive to other data. And so the confusion is unmarked by knowingness going into the unknowingness. The other method would be to increase one's tolerance of confusion, which is done not by increasing his tolerance of spinning energies, but by increasing his tolerance of not knowingness. And once you have these tolerances high, an individual will remain stable and competent in the darndest things, like Kipling's poem, If. It's quite fantastic how much confusion an individual can actually stand up to. How orderly an individual can be in the middle of battle. And how disorderly and confused some people can be on the receipt of the fact that they have just lost a postage stamp. And there are some people who are more activated toward insanity by losing a postage stamp than some people are activated in the middle of chaos of battle itself. You understand? And the difference between these two peoples and the difference between sanity and insanity could be said to be tolerance for confusion, which is tolerance for not knowingness. Therefore, we can increase tolerance for confusion as long as we increase the ability of the person to have numbers of confusions in order to have confusions of comparable magnitude. And in this way, and knowing these things and the other things you know about processing, you really should be able to unravel any case that ever gets stuck in front of you. Thank you. Thank you very much.